I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Rob Gronkowski to TMZ. I'm not ready to commit to the game of football right now. What does that mean? We're going to break all of that down. I'll tell you about Blaine Gabbert's contract situation as well. We've got your mailbag questions coming up. 100% guaranteed to be answered correctly. You got to hang on for that, as well as Manuel Margot gets a new contract. So let's start with Gronk, which I think, you know, the general belief is anyway that if he does play, he will only play in Tampa Bay. I think we're fairly confident that that would be the case. It was interesting because, you know, the thing about Gronk is that, you know, he's very social. He was out there. He had this sort of football camp, I think, over the weekend. Tom Brady was there. It was down in, I want to say it was down in Naples someplace. And so sometime after that, he was on with TMZ. It didn't seem like that. It wasn't a paparazzi type of thing that actually got him for something. And he started talking about, you know, his future, the lack thereof. He talked about how, you know, he was at the camp, but he didn't catch passes. He threw passes. And his comment was that, I knew if I started catching some passes, then my head would have started turning like, oh, crap, I got to go back on the field. And right now I'm not ready to get back on that field. I'm not ready to commit to the game of football right now. And I think the right now part is what we've been harping on. And listen, he may very well stay retired because he certainly accomplished everything he needs to. He's got a Hall of Fame career. He retired once, as did Brady, as it turns out. But he has let Brady go on without him, and he could do it again. You know, last year, the first time, first season he was here, played all the games. It was remarkable that he got himself back into shape. Last year, missed 5 games with a rib injury. Still caught 55 for 802 and 6 touchdowns. I mean, he was very effective when he played. I just think that a year ago he re-signed on March 22nd. Now, remember, they had won a Super Bowl. He had no injuries, and Tom was definitely going to play. This year, for 40 days and 40 nights or so, he didn't know maybe what Brady was going to do, and it looked for all the world well. Brady had, in fact, said he was retired. I mean, that's what Gronk and everybody else had to believe. I had heard, and I don't know if it's true, but I was under the impression that Gronk was going to retire as well. And it made sense, right? Because you go in with Tom Brady, sort of your whole career has been spent with him. He talks you back into football. You win a Super Bowl. You play another year. If Brady retires, you're out too, and you'll see them both on the steps of Canton, Ohio in 5 years. They go into the same, you know, Hall of Fame class as first ballot guys. So it seemed like they were linked up that way. And then Tom changes his mind. And I don't think Gronk was ready for that to happen. I think, you know, much like Tom, I mean, his business acumen is incredible. He has a ton of opportunity all over the place. You know, high GPA in business administration in Arizona. Word is he never spent a dime of football money. He's sort of lived off the money that he's made in endorsements and other business ventures and so on. So I think it's a real reset for him. Not to mention, you know, I mean, this is the guy that, you know, the first year when they were doing the Zoom workouts and stuff, you know, he would change his shirt 5 times to make sure that, you know, it looked like 5 different workouts. There's no rush for him. There really isn't. He can wait until after the draft. He can wait until after OTAs, which he doesn't plan on going to. He can take it right up until the mandatory minicamp, and if he had to, he could wait until after that. So I think we're in for sort of a longer period of time before Gronk actually announces his decision than we anticipated. And I think a lot of it is just because he wasn't ready for Brady to decide he was back. And, you know, I saw just on the internet that Gronk is even having like a draft party wherever the draft is. It's just Vegas or somewhere.
Yep.
You know, he's got that going on. So he's living his best life, man, and he's doing what a Gronk should do in the offseason. He doesn't want to think about football. He doesn't want to think about playing right now. And you know what? Good for him. I personally am not sure. I think that he put the keys on the table once, came back, and put them down again. And I don't know if you usually say you can't pick them up once. How do you pick them up twice? It just, this feels like he's not going to play to me, but I have nothing to base that on.
Well, and also knowing the injuries he went through this year.
Right.
You know, I mean, you came out of retirement. You got another ring with Tom Brady. You came close the second year, although you had a heck of a year injury-wise.
Yeah.
Do you want to go through that again? I mean, how many he's got? Well, how many rings already? How many millions?
He's got four.
You know, he retired once, came back presumably for Tom and for himself too. But
yeah,
you know, he was probably in his mind done.
That's what I think.
I mean, you know, there was always the speculation of Buffalo because that's his hometown, or he made some great comments about Joey Burrow, and so you know maybe Cincinnati. But I don't think any of those were really real. I think he was probably in his mind really ready to retire.
It feels that way, and that's the information I had gotten before Tom decided to come back. And again, there is no, like, this is the one guy, the one position even. I mean, the Bucs are going to have to address tight end simply because, you know, they let O.J. Howard walk. He's in Buffalo. Speaking of tight ends in Buffalo, right, he's in Buffalo. So there's a pretty good indication Gronk wasn't going to Buffalo because they wouldn't have bothered getting O.J. Howard there. And you know, they're down to Cam Brate and what, Cody McIlroy or whatever. Like, they need tight ends, so they very likely will draft one some point coming up here in the draft, May, April 28th through 30th. And, but that wouldn't stop Gronk, right? Because whoever comes in is a rookie and that sort of thing. I just don't know that he's mentally, or I know physically he's taking a risk. I mean, his family didn't think he'd play come back the first time, much less again. He's at this point where he's a series of, you know, 1 year deals. He gets between $8 and $9 million on the field. He makes a ton of it off, and he could make even more. The funny thing is that a lot of these guys, by playing football, they're at the point now, and I think Brady is there too, where, you know, Tom's making $25 million a year or $40 million, whatever, you know, the contract breaks down like, and he could probably make more money off the field if he didn't play football. You know, if he wasn't using 6 months of the year to be consumed in this crazy game, and he could go out and pursue other business opportunities. So now they're at that stage of their careers. I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, he hasn't said he's not playing. And until he says, look, I'm done, but Drew Rosenhaus's agents and others have said, like, he's really undecided. Like, this is not this isn't a leverage thing. This isn't a sort of, you know, cloak and dagger, make them wait, make them sweat. I'm really coming, wink, wink, nod, nod. Everybody knows, but I'm not going to tell you, Tom. I think he truly isn't sure whether he wants to play. And, you know, guys like Gronk, guys like Brady know what it takes for them to play. And quite frankly, you know, Gronk stays in pretty good shape in the offseason. But, you know, if he knew he was going to play, he might be doing different things right now. So it's one of those we really don't know. But it's an interesting interview. If you want to check it out on TampaBay.com, TMZ got a hold of Gronk after that that football camp down in Naples or whatnot. The other news with the Bucs, and I posted this on TampaBay.com. You know, everybody is asking, like, okay, so now what are they really doing with the backup quarterback? I mean, we knew if Tom hadn't come back, it was going to be probably Blaine Gabbert and Kyle Trask, you know, fighting it out to see who was going to be the starter. They said they would bring in, you know, they have to have four quarterbacks, maybe another veteran like a Teddy Bridgewater or somebody. You know, he went to Miami, might have been the guy to come in and compete. But Gabbert was going to get a really good look to start. And Bruce Arians is, you know, not even arguably the biggest Blaine Gabbert fan. He thinks that he can still play. He's, you know, 32, 33 years old, whatever. You know, kind of got into a couple games in mop-up duty the last 2 years for Brady. Played okay when he was in there. But right now, as it stands, the guys under contract are Brady this year alone, Trask, who is in his second year, didn't play at all as a rookie, never even got a helmet. And then they re-signed Ryan Griffin to a one-year deal, which is just basically a minimum deal. So you're going to bring four quarterbacks to camp. You need that many with the volume of throwing that there is and practicing every day. And I was kind of wondering, like, you know, maybe the Bucs are looking at a different guy, or maybe Gabbert has something that's more attractive to him. And listen, it had to be a bit of a come down for him because he was, like I said, up until, you know, Tom let us all know that he was back, Gabbert was probably thinking, I got a fair chance to start on this football team, which is a pretty good team. Now it's even better because the free agents have come back, but Gabbert is absolutely, on this football team, going to be the number two. I think he probably would be anyway. I don't know that there's a situation, but teams are going to probably wait till after the draft to see if they get their quarterback, their rookie quarterback, because they're all trying to fill out rosters too. Most of them will go to camp with four quarterbacks. What I heard was that they were apart, like significantly apart from a salary standpoint. Gabbert likely thought that they were lowballing him a bit. Now, he didn't make a ton of money last year. I think he got $2 million, basically, which isn't a lot for a number two quarterback in this league these days. But then again, Tom Brady never misses games. I mean, the one season that he tore his ACL is literally, you know, the only time he missed games other than when they didn't play their starters or something because they had the division in the playoffs and their seeding locked up. So I don't know what leverage Blaine Gabbert had or has on the Bucs, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know if there's another team which would be helpful for him. I think the biggest leverage he has, quite frankly, is that Tom Brady wants him to be his backup. And these quarterbacks now, guys like Peyton Manning, I think I told the story where Jim Sorgi was Manning's guy, and nobody was going to come in there and take his job, whether he performed well in preseason or not. I kind of get the feeling that Brady, you know, we've seen the Bucs re-sign almost everybody that's been on the team the last 2 years that was a free agent, and I think it's more than likely that Brady would want Gabbert, who helped teach him the offense, to come back as well. So in checking around a little bit, you know, on Tuesday, the belief is, at least from the Bucs, that they're not that far apart. So I would expect this to actually happen. I would think that Gabbert will be their number two. And you know what? Let me amend that. Gabbert will be signed as if he's their number two. And then you got to give Trask an opportunity to try to take that job or compete for it. I don't think he wins it, at least not initially. If something were to happen to Brady and there was a long-term situation, you know, then you'd look at both Trask and Gabbert. But I just think for the last 2 years, Gabbert has been Brady's wingman. And other than at the boat parade, of course, that's Ryan Griffin's job. But he's been his wingman. I don't see that changing. I think Gabbert's going to be back. And the Bucs are encouraged that they think they've begun to narrow the gap, whatever that means. We'll see what he signs for. All right, so in Rays news, you know, it was interesting. A lot of people were kind of, and I've gotten these letters today, people ripping the Rays. One guy in particular, Paul, you know who you are, saying that, here they go. They're just cheap, you know. Why can't they be like the Marlins? The Marlins went for it a couple times and won two World Series. Our guys haven't won any. Well, first of all, the Marlins did win a couple World Series. It seems like 100 years ago. It was a long time ago. And I think this franchise has put itself in a position to have success every year. They're on a roll right now where they could win, you know, be in the playoffs for the fourth straight time. They've got, you know, two American League titles, one American League title, been to the World Series in the last 2 years. So let's see about that. But the narrative was, oh, they're just cheap. They can't afford, you know, here they go. The guy, you know, has a good year. He's going to make a little money in a year or so. Let's dump him before he gets the big salary, and they're cheap. Well, you know, I don't know that you can say that they're cheap because they just went out and signed Manuel Margot to a long-term extension.
Austin Meadows was going to make $4 million this year.
Right.
That was not about the money.
Right.
It was all about they have too many outfielders. He was the weakest one defensively. And they wanted to make room for Josh Lowe. Now, whether they got a good enough haul back for him, that's up to debate, and time will tell.
Sure.
They got a draft pick and then Paredes. So we'll see on that. But, you know, the reasons for what they did, I understand. If you think Austin Meadows was too valuable for this lineup, okay, that's a fair argument. I mean, he drove in 100 runs last year, led your team in home runs the year before that. Sure, he's a great hitter. But the Rays, in, you know, what they look for, defense is a big part of that. And, you know, Austin Meadows at this point was just going to be a DH. And he's in, you know, there's a lot of left-handed bats in this lineup. And if you're not going to play the field, it becomes hard. And when you're trying to bring a young guy up, I mean, it's the same reason they traded Willy Adames.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted to bring Wander Franco up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
how's he doing? But is he any good?
You know, it's probably part of the reason they traded Joey Wendell. I mean, you want to see more of Vidal Bruján and Taylor Walls and, you know, all these prospects you've got coming up.
Yeah.
You know, that's all part of it is you know, sometimes you get in that log jam. The Austin Meadows thing was not about being cheap. If you're disappointed as a fan because you like Austin Meadows,
that's fine.
That's your right, and absolutely. Mm-hmm. And as a Rays fan, it can be tough when you see your favorite players traded time and time again.
That's right.
That's tough as a fan. It absolutely is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you go buy jerseys, you go buy, you know, of the players, and then they're gone.
Yep.
You know, now that happens more places than here. But I think it's encouraging when you see the Rays make a long term, I mean, 12-year commitment to Wander Franco.
Huge,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, they're showing you that they know a new stadium's coming. And at some point, I think a new TV deal, although I don't know the specifics of that. And so they're willing to spend the money if they believe it's the right player for the right. I mean, you know, how many of these big contracts in baseball do you see that teams are just, you know, hung out to dry with because the contracts are too big for a player that's well past their prime?
Right.
You know, Albert Pujols, Miguel Cabrera, Joey mm-hmm. Votto. Although Joey Votto's actually done pretty well. It just did nothing
still
around.
Still mashing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, all these guys that got 10-year deals for huge money that are hitting, you know, upper 30s and 40 by the end of the contract, and they're not worth that money anymore. You know, the Rays definitely don't operate that way.
Right. No, and listen, the best thing that you just said there was that you have to provide opportunity if you think you have a younger, better player who isn't going to get any better staying in Durham. I mean, the reality is that Josh Lowe is a guy that they have has a lot of upside and you know, could end up being part of this young nucleus that, you know, is going to carry them hopefully to a World Series or two.
And they believe he's ready.
They think he's ready. So you have to trust their evaluation. Listen, it happens in football. We don't really mm-hmm. think about it as much because there's a salary cap. But honest to goodness, I mean, when the Glazers, when they went 3 years without a salary cap, the first thing they did was dump free agents. And they dumped Derek Brooks and mm-hmm. Cato June and so on and so forth. You still do it in football if you want to clear the deck for a younger player. You know, and really you have to do it. Like, you have to move on from veteran players. For example, Jason Pierre-Paul. I'm sure they'd love to have Jason Pierre-Paul on this football team. Absolutely sure of it. He's inspirational. You know, when he's healthy, which has been a question of late, but nonetheless, he can play the run. He can play the pass. He's a complete player. You know, got all the stripes on his shirt, the whole thing. Okay? The problem is you drafted Joe Tryon-Shoyinka in the first round a year ago, and he played a good bit of ball last year as a rookie and played well when he played. So if you bring back Jason Pierre-Paul, you're not going to bench him. And all you're doing is slowing the development of what, you know, what you hope is going to be a perennial Pro Bowl player. If he can just get into the game. Sometimes you just have to let guys play. You know, they're not going to get better on the sideline. They can only get, and in baseball, you can only get so many at bats in Triple A before you really do need to face big league pitching. And then get out and then make the adjustments and come back and, you know, fail and find your groove again at the major league level. You can't do that if you keep putting people in front of them. And that's what Meadows was. I mean, Meadows had a great year from a bat standpoint, drove it over 100 runs. I mean, he was really good. And he's a likable guy, and I get why people are upset about it. But you got to be thrilled that they have somebody as good as Josh Lowe to put in that lineup that they feel is going to fill his shoes and maybe then some. You know, they're dealing from strength, and it's not about the money because they're spending money. They've locked up their players, their younger guys, and they just did it, the other day. I understand, and I feel worse for Meadows than I do for the Rays because he's got to go to the Tigers. Maybe that team will turn it around. They gave the Rays some fits a year ago in some late series, but I know his brother's with that organization, so it's tough for him and tough on the fans because they're a fan favorite, no doubt about it. But, yeah, that's just a deal they felt they had to make, and you can't really begrudge them of that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, so we're going to get to some of your mailbag questions today. If we don't get all of them, we will continue that tomorrow as well as the week progresses, but let's get started.
All right, since we were talking about Austin Meadows, we'll start there, and Kyle had tweeted, with the Rays trading away Austin Meadows, is it likely Kevin Kiermaier stays another year?
Well, I mean, it's really one outfielder out, one outfielder in, I mean, because Lowe is going to take his spot, so it looks like Kiermaier is on this team for the time being. I think they still would be, you know, looking or exploring into whether or not they could, you know, trade him and get real value for him with what represents one of the largest contracts on the team. But, you know, the thing about, no matter what you say about Kiermaier, and now they're in a position where they got more outfielders than they need, and you can actually, and it happened last year where Kiermaier sat out quite a few games, but I just, you know, his defensive abilities are still pretty much unrivaled for the most part in the majors in center field. And as long as he can play with the glove and contribute a little bit on offense, he's still a really good weapon, you know, for them. I mean, he helps you win games with that young pitching staff and everything else. So, I think they would have entertained a trade the last 2-3 years. With Kevin Kiermaier, there's no value for him. There's nobody out there that's maybe willing to take on him and his salary or his full salary. So you never say never. Like at any point, if they traded Kiermaier from now, even last year, I think all of us would be like, yeah, that was coming. But the fact that, you know, just the fact that Meadows isn't here really doesn't affect it, because Meadows was a DH primarily. He could play the outfield, but he was kind of a liability out there. So I don't think that affects Kiermaier at all. I don't think there's linkage there. But it still doesn't mean that Kiermaier is going to, you know, be with the team all year either.
Yeah, I think they've probably tried to trade Kevin Kiermaier.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think – well, assuming they did try to trade him, they obviously haven't gotten back what they believe he's worth.
The value, yeah.
Mm-hmm. For those that say the Rays are just being cheap, like when they trade Austin Meadows – they haven't dumped Kevin Kiermaier.
Yeah,
and he's making a lot more than Austin Meadows. Now, you could say in the Rays pitching and defense philosophy that Kiermaier is more valuable than Meadows in that regard, and that's very possible. So, you know, I think with the exception of Wander Franco, I think the Rays are willing to deal any player at any time.
Correct.
If they get they have a value for every player on their roster.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can come up with that type of value, they'll make a move. I mean, they did it with Blake Snell. They've done it with – go through the laundry list of players.
Yeah, sure.
They're not afraid to trade anybody.
No.
I don't think Wander Franco is tradable. Other than that, he's the one that – look, would Randy Rosarena be very hard to trade for? Absolutely. You know, is Tyler Glasnow hard to trade for? Possibly, yeah. Although that depends on –
less so with the injury, yeah.
Well, the injury and knowing that he's a free agent at the end of next season.
Correct.
You know, any talks of does he want to re-sign here, et cetera.
But you're right. You're exactly right. There's no untouchables other than maybe Franco. Franco would be the one guy they would be, you know, less likely to trade.
Right. And that's, you know, I mean, we've known, you know, that he's the franchise for years now.
Sure.
And he's finally here.
And he's locked up.
Right. And they've got him locked up, granted, for big money.
Yeah.
Mostly on the back end, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, but he's got a 12-year deal that at the end he'll be 33, not 43.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's not a deal you think is going to handcuff your team. So, All right, we'll stay with Ray's questions here. And Tommy had tweeted us. So with the extra inning rule coming back for this season, do you think it's here to stay for good? Because they were talking about just playing regular extra innings.
You know, this would be a great question. We should ask Mark this when we have him on. I don't have a feel for what baseball and others feel about it.
I think it's here to stay.
I do, too.
The players like it. The GMs like it.
The reason is simply like baseball is trying its best to speed the game up, to create more action. They're talking about, you know, making the bases bigger. They're talking about ending shifts. They want the ball in play more, and they certainly want games to not last forever. So, you know, this Texas tiebreaker, if you will, where the guy goes to second base in extra innings and things, I don't know why you would stop that, because whether you're talking about makeup games, whatever games, you don't want these games to go on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And it adds, I mean, it's a little gimmicky. It's, you know, you could say, well, it's not baseball. Neither is 3-on-3 in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
We still do that, and I love it.
And they
I think
do
it's
it because
fantastic.
they don't want overtime to go three overtime periods. And,
exactly.
And, you know,
same reason.
And in baseball, now that you're limiting the number of times you can option a player during a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that, do you really want your pitchers, you know, where you've got these innings mapped out going 18
right.
innings tonight?
It screws up everything, because some of these guys, you know, this guy was going to be the starter tomorrow. This guy's going to be the opener, you know. The other part of the rules is that every pitcher must face at least three hitters. So when you get into those extra innings, it count as well, right, where you've got to stay out there and face three batters. So the games will end quicker. And you've got nine innings to try to decide it before that. I have no problem with it, and I agree with you. I don't see any momentum for them to want to end that. Maybe fans are annoyed by it, but I'm not. I like knowing the game's going to end quicker.
Unlike football, you know, both teams have the same runner at second base.
Go.
I mean,
yeah,
You know, both teams have the exact same scenario. Mm-hmm. It's not like, hey, if we score in the first possession, it's over.
That's right, sudden death rule, right?
You know, exactly. And same with hockey, 3-on-3. Both teams have three people on the ice and go play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone starts from the same same advantage or disadvantage, however you want to look at it.
Right.
Brian had tweeted, what would need to go wrong for the Rays to miss the playoffs?
Wow. I think it'd be more what went right with other teams. I the biggest thing you worry about is injuries. I mean, we've seen that last year with Glasnow. You've got some young pitchers this year, and so you're really counting on those guys developing. I think you're going to need that to be competitive. I think it just comes down to injuries, really. And if maybe you see a surging team in the American League East or many of them, I think the division is still very, very good. I don't know that the Yankees are what the Yankees have been. You know, the Blue Jays are ascending. If you had a couple teams above them catch fire in their own division, and then another division was fairly easy. I mean, it's still not balanced scheduling, so anything can happen in the American League East. But I would say primarily injuries would be the thing that would get them, and perhaps. Some other teams being better than we expect in their own division. So
there's a good chance that all three wild cards this year, and there are three wild cards now,
right?
Mm-hmm. Come from the American League East.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? Yeah.
I mean, last year, all four teams, minus Baltimore, won 90 games in the AL East.
That's right.
There's a good chance that could happen again this year.
Yeah, so it's damn competitive, and you know, when you start getting down to those last couple wild card games, you know, or wild card teams, you don't know what the other divisions are doing. And, you know, if there's, say, there's two or three really good teams in the Central or the West or whatever, you'll just have to see. But I mean, first of all, nothing's guaranteed to these teams, right? I mean, you know, the Rays, they're trying to do something they haven't done in their franchise history. But, you know, when you win 90 something, then 100, then, you know, American League East titles back to back. I mean, you're pretty locked in franchise at that point. But you look at, you know, their decision not to have too many, or their staff isn't really anchored, if you will, by a veteran pitcher the way it was, say, with Charlie Morton back in the day. You know, so it's a little different. I mean, there's still some areas where you go, okay, well, you know. If Shane McClanahan is an ace, if, you know,
I think it's the starting pitching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Will Drew Rasmussen continue to perform the way he did at the end of last season? He made him a starter.
As a starter, he was great.
Is Luis Patino going to make the jump as a young pitcher that you expect from him based on his talent? How does Shane McClanahan handle being the ace?
A lot of pressure, yeah.
You know, what has Corey Kluber got left in the tank?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you start going through this, and then, you know, then injury. You know, how does Shane Boz come back from the elbow surgery and you know, how he pitches, and as a young pitcher, too? I mean,
yeah.
You know, the next question, and we can kind of morph into this, Michael had tweeted, have the Rays made enough improvements to the roster to win a World Series this season? And I'll go, I mean, their improvements aren't necessarily external.
They're not new players.
It's Wander Franco's first full season.
Yeah, exactly.
Randy Arozarena's second full season.
Mm-hmm.
Shane McClanahan now being an ace in his second full season.
Yep.
Luis Patino's first full season. Shane Boz's first full season once he gets healthy and back.
Yeah.
You know, Drew Rasmussen is a full-time starter. You know, all these, you know, it's Josh Lowe's development. You know, you just start, it's a lot of the improvements weren't necessarily external. I mean, Corey Kluber is an external signing.
Yeah.
Trading for Harold Ramirez. You know, but a lot of the improvements are banking on these young players having more experience in growing the way we believe their ceiling, you know, as they start to hit what their potential is. You know,
right.
How will, and Wander Franco in 70 games amazed us. How will
was he
doing
162? Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, these guys have enormous upsides. They have high ceilings, and they've already performed at such a high level that you do wonder, you know, if they're able to stay healthy, like what they could do for a 162 game season. And they're going to be superstars, and they're betting on that. They're betting on these guys developing and becoming great stars in the league, not just on Rays, but in the league. That's how good they are. So, yeah, that's the upside. It's the upside of the team. You're right. They didn't go outside and bring in a ton of players, a ton of position players. They trust what they have, and they trust their guys are going to get better. And they've already had playoff experience. They've been, like I said, they won over 100 games last year. I mean, there's a culture now with this organization that these young guys have been winning all the way through the minors. You know, that they came up together and they won in Durham and they won, you know, at every level they've been in. So they expect that to continue. And it's exciting, right? Because you're not talking about, hey, you know, who did the Rays bring in that we think is going to make a difference this year? You know, you're talking about how much better will Wander Franco be? That's a different conversation, and it's a much better one.
I also think it's exciting when you look at, you know, one of the things that Rays fans or maybe baseball fans will critique more than Rays fans. You know, that it's a different lineup every day and there's no consistency. Their infield this year is Brendan Lau at second, mm-hmm. Wander Franco at short,
mm-hmm.
and then either Taylor Walls or Yandy Diaz at third,
right.
and then Choi and Yandy Diaz at first, and occasionally Harold Ramirez.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty consistent infield now.
That's right.
Randy Arozarena is going to play most games in the outfield. Kiermaier is going to play a lot, and Margot is going to play a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Phillips will spell them in all three fields. Mm-hmm. Harold Ramirez occasionally will go out there, and Josh Lowe is going to play a lot. So actually, maybe Margot doesn't play as much, or Kiermaier plays less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're gonna have a more set lineup, and we know Zanino's going to take most of the games behind the plate. The Rays have transformed into this everybody's utility guy and plays 18 different positions in a game, and I'm exaggerating, of course, but to where there's a lot more set positions. You know, I don't know how the lineup's going to shake out, and that could change around. But
yeah.
You're going to see the same players playing most of the games.
Right.
Which is a big change for the Rays for the last few years.
Yeah. I'm convinced that Kevin Kiermaier, in his quest to have 162 lineups, will manage to juggle them. It'll be the same guys. He'll just juggle them around quite a bit and try to get there if he can. But, yeah, I mean, this is not where you have job sharing at a lot of positions, you know. They're all capable in the outfield, clearly, but, like, you know who your shortstop is. You know who your second baseman is. You know who your catcher is. And Zanino will get the bulk of that, I think. But, yeah, I mean, you can, you know, and that's cool as a fan. Like, you know, you pay to see your money. You go out there. You knew that Evan Longoria was always going to be a third. You know, like I think that's the fun part. Is knowing your guys are going to be out there. So it's a little different for the Rays, for sure.
All right, we'll switch to some Bucks questions. We have a few more Rays questions. We may save some of them for Mark Topkin.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple on the CBA and how that may affect the Rays in the future and the rotation and that. But we'll say we're going to have Mark Topkin on later this week, as with opening day being Friday. Sure. So we'll switch to a few Bucks questions here. Harlan had tweeted, is the co-defensive coordinator as unusual as it seems?
You know, I don't – I've done this a little bit in the NFL. It's rather common in college football. Mm-hmm. Not as common in the NFL. I don't believe – and I'd have to check this because my memory is going. I don't believe the Bucs have had co-coordinators before, at least on that side of the ball. I can't remember. Certainly they didn't have it in the offense. Now, you've had – situations where the head coach, you know, was an offensive guru and may have, you know, contributed to calling plays or had a coordinator and he called plays. But to have co-coordinators, I think that's it's rare here. I don't know that it's innovative necessarily. Like I said, it's done all the time in college football. The reason for it with the Bucs in this situation is very simple. Todd Bowles is now the head coach. He has forever been one of the best defensive minds in football. And he has done an unbelievable job here for the last, you know, 3 years, whatever it's been. And because of that, Todd Bowles has made it clear that, you know what, I'm going to call the defense because that's when they're at their best. Now, for him to be a head coach and still call the defense, even when, you know, if it's an offensive coach like Gruden and one he called the offense, or Sean Payton, those guys have to spend an awful lot of time watching film, doing the practice scripts. You know, you have certain days where you practice certain things, right? You'll do situational play calling, for example. And one day, you know, it might be second and 10, or you're working on, you know, third down and short one day, or, you know, so you practice situations, but you have to have the scripts, you have to have the film, you need a look squad to give you those looks. So, you know, each day you're kind of working on a different area of the game. Well, if Todd Bowles now is the head coach, and he used to get in at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning to do those scripts for practice, and he was only working on the defense, he's going to need help on that side of the ball, because now he needs to be maybe in an offensive meeting room. He needs to go by the quarterback room and talk to Tom Brady. He needs to know sort of what's going on the offensive side. He's got to worry about the entire football team, not just the defense, even though he's going to call the defense. So this is when you're fortunate with the continuity. He can turn to Casey Rogers, who has been his right-hand man all the way going back before the Jets situation when he was head coach there. He can turn to Larry Foote, and he can say to those guys, look, you guys split up the duties, okay, of going in the film room, helping me prepare a game plan, you know, doing the small things too, as far as preparing scripts for practice and all of that. But I'm going to be calling it, and I'm going to be watching film as well. But I've got to address the entire team, and things come across a coach's desk that has absolutely nothing to do with football. You know, it's players' girlfriends, it's their wives and their girlfriends. It's, you know, it's just, it can be anything. But you're the face of the franchise. You've got a lot more media obligations. You simply don't have the time to focus on one side of the ball, nor do you want to, because you're the coach of the entire team. So the fact that Todd is still going to call the defense and be the head coach, and he knows what that requires of him away from those defensive meeting rooms, that's why you have coordinators. He could have named a coordinator, but he's calling it. So what's the point? So now he can split it up between Rodgers and Foote and say, you know, for example, okay, you know, you've got third and six today. You know, break down what we're doing. You know, the other guy maybe is working on the run defense or the run fits, you know. So you can assign them different things, and it all comes together, and then Todd is going to, you know, once he sees it puts together, Todd's going to call it. And I think it's, you know, those are big jobs. So I think that's why he has, you know, sort of two guys doing it. Had Arians, had Bowles moved on and Arians was still the head coach, he was going to make, I think, Larry Foote the defensive coordinator. It just so happens Casey Rogers is really close to Todd Bowles. And so in Bowles' instance, he made both Foote and Rodgers co-defensive coordinators. But it is rare. It's not something that I can remember the Bucs having done.
All right, Sean had emailed. Now that Todd Bowles is the coach and Tom Brady here, chances are we'll be a good enough team for Byron to get a head coaching gig. Brady isn't going to learn a third offense, at least not in Tampa. Who would be your best offensive coordinator you think the Bucs can get next year? I know it's too early to think about this, but hey, laugh out loud.
That's a really good question because we know Byron Leftwich came close to getting the Jacksonville job this year. This time, I think it's reasonable to think if he has another good year, which you would think he would with Brady, that he might be a head coach somewhere else next season. We don't know if Brady's going to retire or unretire. That might be a factor in all of this. But I will say this, that, you know, as far as offensive coordinators go, remember, BA is still in the building. He's not calling it. He's not going to be on the coaching staff, none of that, right? But the guy that he was grooming was Thad Lewis. And, you know, former quarterback, was with 8 different organizations, quarterback to Duke. He probably wasn't ready yet this year. The receivers coach Garver, too, is another guy that might go with Leftwich, so you might lose him. So, I mean, you could look outside, and there would probably be a lot of people, of course, you know, wanting to come be a coordinator in Tampa, especially if Tom was still here. If Tom's still here, then that raises all kinds of possibilities because there's a ton of coordinators out there that he's worked with in the past. Or not a ton, but a few. And but I think that they would stay in-house, you know. I think it would be Kevin Garber. It'd be Thaddeus Lewis. It'd be one of those guys, I think, that Bowles is comfortable with. It could even be Clyde Christensen, by the way. You know, I haven't mentioned him, but I think Clyde, who has been a coordinator with the Colts, worked with Peyton Manning, already works with Tom Brady as a quarterback's coach. I wouldn't dismiss him out of hand either. You know, it could be that Bowles, who has been with Clyde going back to their Temple days, maybe he'd be more comfortable. It's really who Bowles is more comfortable with, but I do know that Lewis was one of those guys that they were sort of grooming on the side, the way they were with Larry Foote. All right, we've got more questions to get to tomorrow, and you can add to them if you'd like to. You can do that by sending them to us at SportsDayTB on Twitter. You can send them to me at NFL Stroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. The Rays, of course, opening day is on Friday for them. Major League Baseball's opening day. Games begin Thursday. It's also Masters Week. Tiger Woods is playing. Can you believe that? He's going to tee off around 10:30 or so on Thursday. Unbelievable. What is it, 14 months since that horrific accident? So we're going to have Mark Tompkin on to talk about the Rays and their opening day against the Baltimore Orioles. Lots coming up, but go ahead and get your mailbag questions to us, and we'll answer those for you as well tomorrow. Thanks for listening. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tempe Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.